Thank you. Let's put the water here. Let's go ahead and turn to Daniel chapter number 10. Good to be here. Good to see you all. Welcome. If you've traveled into beautiful Brisbane, we're glad you're here. It's good to see some pastors here. God bless you. We do honor you for your work. And nobody will ever quite understand the burdens that a pastor carries unless you actually sit in that seat. And we ought to pray for our pastors. We ought to be patient with them. And we ought to just be wise and understand that, you know, before we comment about things, we don't always know all the details. And let's always give the pastor the benefit of the doubt. And love the man of God and pray for him. I believe we ought to do that. So welcome pastors, welcome missionaries. There's some good, godly missionaries here. To be honest, it's an honor to be in your company. Our missionaries are missionaries that preach the gospel. And they do other good things, but they preach the gospel. They still believe that people need to be saved. They still believe that if you die in your sins, you'll go to hell. And they know the only answer of men anywhere, of any culture or colour, is the same Jesus Christ that we'll preach here tonight. And I thank God for our missionaries. I thank God for their continuation. And let's bless and support our missionaries. I never understand how somebody once supported missions. I don't understand that. You know, that kind of be like saying you used to read the Bible or you used to pray. You know, you used to tell people about Jesus, kind of like it just fell away. Every single Christian ought to be involved in the business of missions. And if God hasn't sent you and he sent somebody else, then you need to be faithful unto that. I'm thankful for the people who support us. And I mean that very sincerely. Always be involved in the work of missions. Now, when Alvin got up this morning, he said, good evening. So I guess I should say good morning. You know, I don't know. I'm not sure what kind of church this has become, to be honest. The song leader gets up and says, let's get high. I mean, in my day, that never happened. All right, I know a lot's changed, but you know, I'm glad he did that. I was almost going to preach him this month in Thailand. And now that he's revealed himself, I can make alterations to that. Good to be here with Pastor and Mrs. Fisher, dear to me, more than that, a mentor, a teacher. The man of God that God brought to my life in just the right time. And I do esteem him and call him blessed. And I'm glad that he's here. Daniel chapter 10, I'm going to just point out something here in the Word of God. Just something of my contemplations. And I want to just have you notice something that said. You should be in Daniel chapter 10. And what is happening here is that Daniel, in verse number 2, has set himself to mourning or fasting. And he's doing that to seek understanding from God. And I'll perhaps revisit that a little later in the message. And he's been doing that for 3 whole weeks. You know, I wonder what you would fast about even for 2 days. But he's been doing that for 3 whole weeks. And finally, there is an angelic being appears to him and begins to talk to him beside a river. And verse number 7, Daniel says that I saw the vision. There were others with me. They felt a great quaking upon them and went to hide themselves. So Daniel alone was there. And then a message is going to be given to Daniel about some things, and explained that there was a delay, that even though he had been praying, that from the first day of his prayer, God was seeking to answer that. But there was a contention or a battle with principalities and powers. And by the way, that is not just abstract or symbolic. That really happened. And that took place in a real place. And where that took place is the realm between heaven and earth. And so we call that the space. We just say, well, that's the space. But that's the domain of principalities and powers. And so heaven is a real place. Heaven is not in another dimension. Heaven's just in another location. Heaven is there right now. And God is there, and Jesus is there, and many others are there. And there are things happening in heaven right now. And in fact, the Lord taught us that we should pray that His will would be done on earth as it is in heaven. And so right now in heaven, the will of God is being fully done. It's a real place. We're separated from heaven by the glassy sea, or the crystal sea, some say. And that's kind of the underside of heaven, but it's a real place. Heaven is there, and then we have this domain of a space where there are principalities and powers, and then we have the earth that we are on, and it's a real place. When people die, they don't sort of cross to another dimension. They leave their body and they go up, I think accompanied by an angel. They leave their body, they go northward, and they go up through that area of space, that darkness, and they make their way to heaven. And that's where everybody has gone who's died and gone to heaven, because it's a real place. I think that domain is spoken about in Psalm 23. Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. I think that's talking about that journey. And I don't want to exegete that tonight, but it is not coincidental that saints through the ages have clung to Psalm 23 as the psalm that speaks about our departure, the comfort psalm of dying saints for hundreds of years. This angelic being has made his way down and explained some of the obstacles, and I don't want that to be my focus tonight. I want to focus on something that occurs in verse 11 and verse number 19, and it may be something that you have just read over, but there is something unusual here. What is unusual here is verse 11. And he said unto me, so now this angelic being is relaying the message from God. We all in this together. And he's not going to speak his own words. He's going to speak the message that God has told him to say. Okay, angels are not going to opinionate. They are obedient servants to the Most High. And they do what they're meant to do. And they say what they're meant to say. And they don't say any more and they don't say any less. And they just perfectly follow the directives of God, who sent them or dispatched them for a purpose. And they're careful about that, as anybody should be who is doing something for God. And he said unto me, and I just want you to notice, it's like here's the address from God to you, Daniel. He's speaking to Daniel, and he says, O Daniel, a man greatly beloved. Now, that's unusual, because that's almost New Testament terminology. It's unusual that is used here. It is not common at all to read that. For somebody to be called of God, greatly beloved. And you know, God was communicating that to Daniel. And God was letting Daniel know that I love you in a special way. And to me, Daniel, you are greatly beloved. And again in verse number 19, and he said, oh man, greatly beloved. And I want to tonight just talk a little bit about why I think that God had such a particular love for Daniel. Now, it would be a mistake for you to think what many believers do think, that God just likes everybody the same. Actually, that's not true. And people say, well, you know, God loves everybody. And you can say that. That's scriptural, you can say that. But you have to say, in what way does God love everybody? Well, exactly what does that mean? And what does it mean? Because there are people who would be thinking, well, if you love me, surely you wouldn't put me in hell. How can you love somebody but you put them in hell anyway? I mean, how does that work? If I'm loved, well, I must be okay. But when you talk about the love of God, you have to understand it in the sense of God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth on him. And what God is saying is, I love you this much that I've shown you, I've sent my Son, my only Son, from heaven to earth to suffer and die a death of suffering and to be seen as an object of shame, and to do that because the truth of it is, you're the one who should die, and you are the one who has the shame, and you are the one who should be cast into hell forever. But I so love the world, I so love the people of the world, that when you sinned, and I could have walked away and said, well, you chose to do that, Adam, I told you not to do that. There was no trickery. There was nothing. You know, I was very clear with you. There was thousands of trees that you could have eaten of without incident. There was only one you were not supposed to eat of, but you chose to eat of that. And by the way, Adam did choose. Eve was deceived and Adam chose. And so at that point, God would have been justified to just walk away and say, well, you know, this be this on you. I mean, you did this. This is not what I wanted, but, you know, you chose that. And then every person born, just like all of us were as the descendants of Adam, would have been born to live a few short years and go to hell forever. And there would have been nothing any of us could have done, and none of us could have blamed God. There would be nobody who could say, well, I never sinned. No, you did sin. We all sinned. We all do sin. So God so loved the world that he said, I'm going to give you a chance. I'll save you even though you can't save yourself. I'll make a way. And whosoever, I mean anybody, anywhere, in any place, no matter how great their sin or how small their sin, no matter the color of their skin, the language they speak, the culture they're in, whosoever will believe on the Lord Jesus Christ shall be saved. You know, God never made salvation difficult. There still are people who get saved on their deathbed. Somebody once said, the problem with people who wait till the 11th hour to be saved is they usually die in the 10th hour. And there's no guarantee that you get to that place. There's no guarantee that you'll be even able to at that place. Now is the day of salvation, the Bible says. You ought to, when you hear and you know, you ought to believe. But there are still people who just cry out in the last. God put one of them in the Bible, that thief on the cross, who could never be baptized, could never join the church, never gave a tithe, never went soul winning or helped with the youth ministry or drove a bus or never did any of that, never got to be part of a communion service and, you know, break bread and remember the Lord in his death, and never did any of that. And God said, write that one down, put that there, lest they get it wrong theologically, and let's just nail that. I shouldn't say nail that one there. That's poor form, and I have to apologize later. But put that one in the Bible so that everybody would know you still can be saved even that way. So that's the universal love of God that God has for every person on the earth. And God has shown that. And love always has an expression. Love is never just academic. Love is never just emotional. Love is never just a feeling. Okay, that's a grave misunderstanding. Love always evidences itself in an action. And if you want to know if someone loves you, look what they do. Look what they've done. So God so loved the world, he made a way. And there is that kind of love that God has for everyone. The chance is there for the most wicked person on earth to still cry out and ask for forgiveness and mercy, and for the sake of what Jesus did on the cross, that person can be saved. That's the love of God. That's for everybody. Now, don't doubt for a moment that God has already put millions into hell. Millions into hell. Some really bad and some just a bit bad. But all sinners. Some wicked person somewhere. And some just some hard-hearted granny who lived down the street who thought that she didn't need Jesus. Millions and millions and millions have gone to hell, and many, many more will. So we need to be clear what we're talking about. Now, beyond God's love that he has for everybody, and by the way, every Christian has the capacity to love people. All right, God never said to you that you have to like everybody. All right, so you got to understand. God said you need to love everybody, and you have the capacity to love everybody by how you treat them, by what you do. So everybody can do that, but we all also understand that there are some people we like more than other people, and God understands that too. You know, he's wise, and he knows how we are, and he knows how things are. All right, now there's a few people. God loves many people in the Bible who served him and lived for him, but there's just every now and then there are some that get kind of a more special mention as being particularly loved. And I guess we could understand that by saying God really likes them. Okay. And he loves everybody, but there are some he loves a lot. Okay. So you should digest that. There are some that he has a particular love for. And usually those people, you see things in their lives that show how that came to be. And there's some things here in Daniel's life that I think sort of we can identify why God called him that greatly beloved. Why he was really particularly loved of God. You know, don't be naive. There are some Christians who are saved and do nothing for God. And I just need to tell you something. God knows you do nothing. Right, he knows. He knows you squander your whole salary on yourself. He already knows that. Okay, he knows when you don't feel like going to church, you don't go. Right, he knows that. So no, he's not deceived. He knows that you spend most of your life thinking about yourself. And he knows that. And he's not going to put you into hell for that, but he gets it, you don't give him a great deal of thought. And there's plenty like that. But he also knows there are some who give him a great deal of thought. There are some who do their best to do things that please him. And they think about that. What would please him? What would he have me to do here? And God can separate who is who. God sees every man's heart. Nobody's deceiving God, you know. And just don't. By the way, don't deceive yourself. Okay, if you want to live life as a slacker, and you know you want to do a whole lot, and you know you want to be feelings led, and when you don't feel like doing something, you don't. And you find excuses and reasons why you don't serve God and you don't do what others do. Meanwhile, there are other people risking their life, suffering in hardship, getting sick in places that they could leave, except that's where God wants them to be. There are Christians financially sacrificing unto their own hurt, and there are people doing things. And just be clear tonight, don't be deluded that God sees all of that super, super clear. He knows who is who and what we do and what we don't and how we think and where our heart's at. It's all laid out before him. And but Daniel was just greatly beloved of God. Now, to get some context to Daniel's life and to understand this, I think, you have to remember that Daniel was taken into captivity in about 605 BC. So, you know, that's really easy to roll off the tongue. Daniel was taken into captivity. Right, if you were taken into captivity, you'd be into 40 years of psychological appointments trying to deal with the trauma and the post-traumatic stress of everything you saw. Because taken into captivity doesn't kind of mean, hey, are you ready to go? You know, here's your seat number. I hope you enjoy the in-flight service. And we should be there not too... I mean, it's not that way. Taken into captivity means the whole place has been burned down. You've had family members killed, like lots of them. All the life you knew is just smashed and wrecked and ruined and gone. The people who've taken you have brutalized you and by force have taken you, and they've separated you away from all the people you loved, and suddenly your whole life has gone through a very traumatic, upsetting event. And so as a young boy, Daniel is taken from his place by force to another place. And so you have to get that clear. Daniel lived to the age of around about 82. And these things that we are speaking of tonight in chapter number 10, this is in the latter part of his life, the later part. It's towards the end. And that's not unusual, by the way. God watches us. And it's not unusual that it's at the latter part that God says he's greatly beloved. Daniel, you're greatly beloved. And he was greatly beloved because of the life he lived and the things he did. And it showed God, you're my everything. You're my everything. And I'll point out a few of those things. But it came at the latter part. And it was kind of like God is watching, and he's always watching all of us. And by the way, don't be discouraged tonight, because I do want to say to you, it's never too late. It is not too late to recover yourself and to get into alignment with the will of God and the purposes of God. It is not too late. It's never too late. It's never too late. And don't believe your own doubts or the doubts of the enemy. It's never too late. You can get going for God anytime that you decide to do that. And so he lived to about 82. He lived through changing empires. He was taken into captivity by the Assyrians. He lived through another group taking over. None of this his people, the Medes and the Persians. I mean, he's gone through all of this. And you look at this man and it stands out there. First of all, there's no resentment, right? He's not Australian. He's not demanding an apology, you know, because he's been permanently scarred. He's not in therapy. He doesn't need government benefits to get through the rest of his life. There's just none of that. There's just none of that there, right? There's no even slight resentment or blaming God about anything that happened in his life. And by the way, blaming God and blaming others never delivers you from anything. You have to decide. You can make a choice whether you want to be debilitated or you want to be delivered. It's really up to you. You know, your infirmity is not your identity. You don't have to succumb to that, where you turn your infirmity into your identity. There are a lot of people who have infirmities. And thankfully, most people don't talk about it, and that's okay. We don't need to know unless we need to know. We don't even know what Paul's was. We just know he had one. And I think the reason we know that is just there was a lesson in that for us. But I think lots of people have them. I think lots of people have them. You know, sometimes you look at healthy people, you think they're healthy, people serving God, getting on with it, and you presume, well, they just had an easier life than you. And let me tell you, the half has not been told about the lives that people have had, even sitting around you. And just because someone makes the choice to get on with it for the Lord and makes the choice that by the grace of God, I'm going to get on with it and serve the Lord, doesn't mean that they don't have, you know, issues and infirmities and a story and things that trouble them. You know, that's not so. So sometimes I do think we need to get over our issues, because your issues can be kind of your excuse for not serving God. You know, and you say, well, you know, you don't know what happened to me. Okay, number one, that's probably true. Number two is I believe you. I believe you. You have no argument from me. I believe you. But now my question is, so what are you going to do? All right? Even if all of that is true, so now what are you going to do? What are you going to do with this precious thing that God calls life? And these days and opportunities to serve, what are you going to do? Okay, that ball's in your court. And you have to make those decisions. But I do think we need to cast off the norms of the culture. And say, well, you know, you may look at it all that way, but I have God, and I know Jesus, and He is powerful, and He can help, and by the way, He can heal, and He can give grace, and He can get me by, and you know, I'm not adverse to whatever steps you feel you need to take, but please don't impose that on me. I'll just do it my way and you can do it your way, but I suggest we both do it God's way. That's probably what we need to do. And so there's no resentment from this boy. None. I mean, he's not even, well, you know, if that's what Christianity is, my unsaved friends treat me better than that. You know how many times I've heard that? And anyone who's ever said that, by the way, you're just in a pattern of thousands of people who've said that. Okay, you weren't the first one to say that. There was none of that. There was none of that. There was none of, the religion my parents taught me didn't work because of look where I am. None of that. No, this boy as a boy had something real in his heart. This boy had some convictions, some belief in God. This boy didn't care what others did or didn't do. He just knew what he was going to do. And he had that. And so there's no resentment. He has reconciled all of that within himself. And you do need to reconcile some things. He had reconciled where he was. You know, he wasn't in his place. He wasn't with his family. All that was gone. But he just, you know, bedded that down. Okay, I'm here. That's it. I'm here. And this is not, you know, it's just where I am. And God's allowed this. But God's still God. It's fine. The Lord will help me. You might not be in a different geography, but you might find yourself in a different place where you didn't think you were going to end up. And he bedded all that down. And he knew who he was. And he was settled about that. You know, okay, I'm a Hebrew. And I'm a believer in the one true God. And I serve him. And my belief in the one true God is not dependent on others around me. I know who I am and I know what I've believed. And he knew who he was, and let me say, he also knew who he was not. And you need to settle who you're not. Who you're not. You know, I tell our ties when they say something about, you know, this unsaved people do this or think that, or the people at my work do this, and I say, yeah, but listen, you're not them. You're not them. Yeah, but everybody does this and does that. I know, but you're not them. And you need to settle that. Who you're not, you know, you're not your unsaved friends at work. You're not them. You're not the same as the leftist media and the trends of the culture that surround us. Or are you? But you're not them. And you just need to settle that. And by the way, you need to tell your kids that. That's not who we are. But all the kids at school, you know, dress this way. Well, honey, they can, but that's not who we are. Oh, you'll traumatize them. You know, you tell them that's not who we are. Well, you know, the other kids get to run around church and we have to sit up and listen. Well, that's okay. That's their family, but we're our family. And we do this. And you need to know who you're not. You know, that's not me. That's not me. Most of the things in the culture, that's not me. That's not me. I hear about people saying, well, when you get older, you know, that's your time. Life goes quick. You only get one life. And you need to do the things you want to do. And, you know, now you've got a chance to live for yourself. Okay, I get it that you think that way, but I know something else, and I'm not you, and I don't believe it's only one life. I actually believe there's a forever life I'm going to, and I'm not here to just live for myself. And you don't have to feel sorry for me. I'm doing okay, and I'm not miserable. And that's not me in the line behind you at the psychologist. That's not me. Okay, and I'm not criticizing you if that's helpful for you. But you do need to settle who you are and who you're not. And you have to decide that in your own heart. You need to know who you are. By the way, I'm an independent Baptist. Let's just say that too. Okay, I'm not an ecumenical. I'm not a neo-evangelical. I have friends in many places, and there are men of God and good people in many places, and only a fool would deny that. But I know who I am. All right, that's it. I just know who I am. I know the Bible I use. Okay, I use the King James Bible. That's the Bible I use. And then I have reasons for that. And I know the doctrine I have. And I don't have the doctrine because You know, I signed a church membership and I just believe that while I'm there, and then I go somewhere else, I'm going to believe something else. No, no, I thought it through. I looked at the book. I know what I believe. So you've got to work out who you are and who you're not. And I see in Daniel just somebody who just seems to have it together mentally and spiritually, despite all the things that happened to him. I want you to see that, number one, Daniel cared. My number one, two, three, four, go quick. Don't panic. Not my number one, I got 4 points, 79 sub-points, and 8 good illustrations. All right. Number one, Daniel cared about God when he was in a place where nobody else did. All right? So I'm trying to say to you, when God sees stuff like that, that means something to him. We read in Daniel chapter 1, verse 8, as a young man, it says, Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself. Now, do you understand how easy it would be just to go along with everybody else? You understand how surrounded he was by the culture of that place? How that everybody around him was just going along with it? Do you understand that there were other Hebrew kids who came? You read Daniel chapter 1 and it tells you that the king said, go and pick the best of Israel. Get some of the kids from the princes and some from the leaders and pick the smart ones. And by the way, they're all made eunuchs. And that's another thing Daniel just had to reconcile, right? No family for me, no wife for me. You know, some of you might have to reconcile that. And just have peace. You know, you wouldn't be the first person on their own who can get through life. You know, is there loneliness? Of course. Is there some hard things? Of course. But you can do it. You can, with God, you can do it. And if there are reasons and purposes and or that's the way that life has gone for you at this time, you know, the Lord is with you. And you'll be fine. You can get by. I'm just saying, everything ought not to be a life-shattering trauma that just debilitates you from going on. Lots of people are going through stuff. You know, go to the third world and get some context. You know, just go to the third world and you know, spend a couple of weeks there and just see the suffering that is just around you all the time. And you'll be very thankful for the life that you're complaining about right now. You know, and so Daniel, he purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself. What I'm saying is that when he went to your job, he said, even though I'm the only Christian here and I've got to work with these blokes or these girls, you know, I'm not them, and I've got some lines drawn about how I live my life and what I do. And God, I may be a long way from Jerusalem, but my heart and my eyes are on you. In the office, in the car, at home, wherever I am, I'm for you. I'm for you. Now, do you understand when God sees stuff like that? That moves him. He sees somebody who cares about the things of God when nobody else is. And they'll laugh at you. They'll mock you. They'll talk about you. They'll say things. I mean, that's part of the package. When you're different, you know, you're just different. And people say all kinds of things. But when you do it for the Lord, when you're that kind of person, I mean, that God sees that. And he gets it. You're doing that for me. And God sees that. You know, some people, we have these lizards in Thailand. Just they're nice. I mean, but they change color from whatever, wherever they are. Put them on a leafy green tree. They're green. It's kind of fun. You move them around, they change colours. Put them in a bed of flowers and they become like the flowers. put them on a you know, dusty dirt, and they'll look like that. That's what they do. There's some Christians like that. There's some believers like that. You know, you are whatever you're around. You know, you're the same as whatever you get around. And you just, you know, everyone likes you. Yeah, almost everyone. And, you know, you really fit in. There's something wrong when you really fit in with the world's crowd. There's something wrong when they think you're just like us. Okay, and I'm not saying you make enemies, and I'm not saying you try to, you know, but there are things of God you ought to stand for. Do you know how many people even sat in this very church who used to believe some things, and they don't anymore? What happened? I mean, I'm not talking about people who preached it. I'm talking about people who went home and burned stuff in their wardrobe because they got a conviction about something. What happened? I mean, what happened? Talking about people who believe some things. Talking about people who taught others things. What happened? I'm not talking one or two. I'm talking hundreds. And they're not even in church. And stuff they used to believe, they don't believe anymore. And I don't know how that works. I don't know if you're pretending when you were here or this just sort of fell away over time. I'm not sure really what happened with that. I'm not really sure about that. But, you know, God sees people who do what they do for the Lord, and I'll underline that, not for men, not for the church, not under pressure of others, but they do what they do for the Lord. And even they're laughed at, and even they're mocked, and even people talk about them, they do what they do for the Lord. You're not supposed to just be like wherever you are. So Daniel was different. Number two, Daniel chose for God and would not forsake him even when faced with death. Remember when they said, nobody prays. Well, a decree has been made. Nobody prays. What did Daniel do? Daniel said, well, no, I've always prayed. And I'm not trying to make trouble. I'm not trying to be a rebel. You know, I'm not going to go out in the public street and say, just watch this, I'm going to pray. I mean, he didn't do that. He was just in his same place of prayer. But I tell you what, he said, I'm not going to forsake God, and I'm not going to stop praying to the Lord. And whatever it costs me, but this thing I choose to do, it's God first. And you understand when God sees somebody like that, what he thinks. I'm trying to get you in the mind of God. I'm trying to understand why at the end of someone's life and God has watched all this, he goes and says, greatly beloved. Can you imagine if God said that to you? Imagine if God said, you know, look, Phil, I love everyone, but you are special to me. I mean, can you imagine? Can you imagine the honor? Can you imagine what that is for the Lord to think of someone that way? I mean, not another person. God. And here was Daniel who said, well, if I have to die for him, I'll die for him. That's what he said. Now, let's not make light of that. And by the way, it wasn't to be a quick death. It was pretty gruesome. Do you ever ask yourself the question, what does God expect from you? I mean, not what Brother Shemesh or anyone else thinks, but what is God's expectation of you? How far does he require you to go? Okay, let me answer that for you by reading a couple of verses in Revelation chapter 2. And I want to read Revelation chapter 2, verse number 10, he's talking to some believers in a local church, right? We can relate to that. So it's Smyrna. And he's talking, Smyrna's a place. So it could be Albany Creek, right? It's just a place, that's the point. And he's talking to a church, it's a local church. It's not a mystical out there somewhere church. This is a real church you're actually supposed to put your tithe in. Hello. Okay? That's what this is. And he's talking to the believers there. And he talks about some of their trials. And verse number 9, he mentions, notice it, their poverty. Would you be poor for Jesus? Huh? Like, how about this? No superannuation for you. How about just that? No, in your life, you'll never have that. How about that? How about you'll never own a home? How about that? How about that? How about you'll watch others do things, but for you, you'll never have those things. Yeah, would you? Would you? Would you? If that was the cost, would you? Are you willing? You know, we don't even understand poverty. You know, just a few of those things. Well, listen, you'll never be able to eat out in a restaurant. And your kids won't be able to have the things that other kids have. And your kids will see other kids have stuff, but they won't be able to have that. I mean, would you? Would you? What does God expect? What does God expect? No. Pastor, you're getting a bit extreme here. My idea of serving God is, you know, you just do what you can do and you still have everything because He blesses you. And not only that, you have heaven as well. And you know, that's my idea. Is it? All right, so he said, you have poverty, folks at Smyrna. You know what that means? I'm not making you rich. Right. By the way, he said you are rich, but the riches you have is different to what other people have. Do you understand that? He said, you are rich. You are. You are. But it's different to what other people have. But outwardly, I get it. I get your poverty. Well, Lord, it is hard. I know. And by the way, in verse number 10, do you have it? Listen, Satan hates you, folks. Yeah, we've been feeling it. Yep. Well, listen, it's going to get worse. Oh, no. What now? Actually, you're going to go to jail. I don't want to go to jail. Yeah. Well, it's actually going to be a few of you. It's jail. Jail. That's what he said, right? He said some of you go to jail. And listen, there's a really bad tribulation coming. Yeah. 10 days. 10 days of your life you'll never forget. You'll never forget this. That's coming too. Lord, come on. It's getting rough. Okay, what does God expect from you? Okay, here's the answer. Here's the answer. The end of verse 10, Revelation 2, the end of verse 10. Here it is. Be thou faithful unto death, and I will give thee a crown of life. That's what God expects of you. Faithfulness unto death. Are you serious? Are you saved? That's what God expects. He expects you to keep going. He expects you to bear your suffering. He expects you to bear your poverty. He expects you to be okay that you don't have everything and you miss out on some stuff. And He expects you to be faithful right to the very end, no matter what happens. No matter what happens. Be thou faithful unto death, and I will give thee a crown of life. Unto death. To the Hebrews, in the book of Hebrews, those Jewish believers who were wavering a little bit in their faith. What was going on? They'd come to Christ. They'd come out of that Old Testament system. But listen, the temple was still there. They'd come out of it, but it was still there. And stuff they'd been doing their whole life, they weren't doing anymore. I mean, at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, the trumpets would sound across the whole city for the prayer time, and all the visuals were still there. You were passing the priests in the streets, and everything you did before was still around you. And yet you've been called out of that to something better. And soon these other things would be done away with. They were done away with spiritually, and they're about to be done away with physically, and all it was all going to go. But they were called out of it. Some of them were wavering. And there's some stern warnings in the book of Hebrews. And they are stern. And they're serious. Because God's not playing. And He says that, you know, ye have not yet resisted unto blood. That's what He said. You haven't yet shed blood. That's what God expects. That far. That much. That serious. Faithful unto death. Not yet shed blood. You know, I have my share of things. I go to a third world country and live there, and you'll go through some stuff. And it's not great. And you know that you know, you're a plane flight away from being somewhere else that'd be maybe a whole lot more comfortable. And you go through stuff, but you know, we don't complain. We shouldn't. Be thou faithful unto death. Well, God, I haven't had to put my life down yet. You haven't, Wayne. And Lord, it's been pretty awful. But you know, I haven't had to shed blood. Well, you haven't. But you need to be willing. That's what God expects. This is not a game. This is we've lost our way. We've watered down our faith. We've thought little of God instead of much. We've forgotten the requirements. We don't even want a sacrifice. We want our sacrifices to be buffered by a certain margin of comfort. And God, what does God expect? He expects what He expected of Daniel, that you will go all the way. And listen, when God sees that, it moves Him that you do that for Him. That's what He sees. That's why He said, Daniel, greatly beloved, I see what you do. I see what you do. I know you could have stopped praying. And I know you could have avoided this, but I see. You care about me, who you've never seen, more than these who threaten you that you do see. Right? And that, God said, I see that. And I'm sure He said to others, look at this one. Right? He did that with Job. Have you noticed Job? Right? Have you noticed Job? Job said, though He slay me, yet will I serve Him. That's what Job said. I mean, that far. And so Daniel did that. Number three, Daniel prayed and sought to understand the ways of God. Why does that matter? Because it shows us Daniel said, I want to understand you. I care to understand. You know, I get it that all this life is around me and all of this, but you're the all in all. And you're the Ancient of Days. And I want to understand you. And you know what he would do? He would pray and fast and mourn for weeks. Over what? A job promotion? No. You know, over what? Getting something? You know, no. Over God, give me a deeper understanding of you. That's what he wanted. That's what he wanted. I want to understand you. I want to understand our times. I want to understand my life. I want to understand you. You're everything. I long to understand you. I want your wisdom. I want your will. I want you. I want you. And he would pray and fast to try to understand and for God to answer his prayers about understanding of certain things. You know, would you fast 3 weeks to get God's touch on you? I mean, would you fast 3 days to get God's touch on you? Really? Would you fast one day for something spiritual, not a physical thing? See, I'm just saying to you, God sees all this stuff. You know, I don't think God would ever use this language. I don't think he'd say it. It almost seems a bit coarse, but you know, some people, you're just a joke. You know, that's how an Aussie would say it. Mate, you're just a joke. You know, you're all talk. You know, you don't do anything. You gob off about everything and you do nothing. I mean, that's a coarse way to say it. But I'm saying God sees the people. And these are not perfect people. I'm not talking about the people who just think they're so holy more than everybody else. You know, the closer you get to God, the more unworthy you'll feel. The more light will come on your life. The more things you'll see. The more humble you'll be. But he just had a desire. Do you long for that? Do you long for that? I remember as a teenager, growing up in Bracken Ridge, you know, and nearby here, and getting on my bike, because, you know, that's all I had, and riding down to Sandgate, right? Go do that little ride sometime. Riding down to Sandgate. And why were you riding down to Sandgate? To go out on the bridge, the Hornibrook Highway Bridge that had just been closed because they opened up a new one, and you could walk out on the old one. And I could walk that bridge and get far enough out on that bridge where there was no one around. And I would get out there, and it still had all the bitumen on the bridge like a road. And I would get out on that bridge at night as a teen, and I would get on my knees, and I would pound the road and beg God for his power and his wisdom. Now, no one saw that. Well, someone saw it. But, I mean, people didn't see that. And then when I got a car, I'd drive down there. And I'm just saying, what would you do for the wisdom that you desperately need? I mean, what would you do? How much do you value the power of God? How far would you go? What would you do? And here was a man who said, you know, I long to understand him. He must have just seemed so weird to everybody. Must have just been so weird, but he wasn't weird to God. And he was blessed with understanding. He had a divine understanding that we go, to this day. I mean, it was to Daniel that stuff was showed. You know, how far would you go for wanting to serve God? Because that's what he did. And then lastly, Daniel spoke the truth even when he was in a place where it was not well received. And I think about, I won't turn there, I think about, you know, the writing on the wall. You know that in Daniel 5 from about verse 22 where the hand appears and writes. And, you know, the king is there and others are there. And they call Daniel in and they want him to tell what he knows. Tell us what it says. You know, in Asian culture, if you say things and the words that you say hurt somebody, are you listening? If you say something and the words that you say hurt somebody's feeling, it is taken that you had intent to hurt. Okay, now just digest that. If you say something, even it's true, even you don't mean to hurt anybody, even you're just talking about something, but if the person hearing that is hurt, then they take it that you had intent to hurt them in the same way that you would hit them with a stick. And that's why if you study Asian culture, when they word things, they go around it in a really roundabout way. And they will say, you know, I would suggest to someone who could be contemplating these thoughts that they consider the possibility of another road and the opportunities that that would bring versus the disappointment of another road. And you're supposed to read all that and get the point. It would be really good if you'd listen, right? And just listen to what I'm saying. But they don't just say it that way. I mean, and they're masters of it. They do it all the time. Because to just say something is taken like, that's hurtful to me and I'm going to fight you. And I've had that happen. I remember sharing with someone and somebody said to me, it was Dio, I can name Dio. Hello, if you're watching on live stream. You've been a blessing, but a lot more problems. You know, I remember saying to Dio, you know, but, you know, you did this and this and this. And by the way, he did. And he said, why you say this to me? Because you did it? You should not say this to me. What should I say? Don't say anything. And he was saying to me, if you say this and this hurts me, I blame you. I blame you. Defamation laws in Thailand are based on not is it true, right, but did it hurt the person you said it? Do you understand that? I'm telling you, look it up. If you put a bad review on about a hotel and you say, worst hotel I ever stayed in, you know, stinky mattresses, bed bugs through the night, the water was polluted, the shower was cold, and the air conditioning didn't work. Now, all of that can be absolutely true, but the fact that you said it and that hurts the person you said it about, you lose in a court, right? Now, why are you saying all of that? Because this is Asian culture, and he's going to be called upon to say, okay, you want me to tell you what the words on the wall say? Well, here's what they say. They say, King, you have been weighed by God and found wanting. And you forgot what happened to the person before you, and you did not humble yourself, but you lifted yourself up. And tonight the kingdom will be taken from you. That's it, that's what it says. I mean, to do that, it just is extraordinarily brave, right? Right? It's just, here's what I'm saying. God is looking and saying, you know, you speak what's true about me. You say it, you say what's true. And I'm saying all of this added up to somebody that God said, you know, look, I was going to tell you this in heaven, but as long as there's a messenger on the way, I'll just let you know now. I really love you. I really do. No, let me say it this way. I greatly love you. I just want you to know that. Coming from the Lord. From the Lord. Now, most of us will just be happy with, yep, your name's in the book. Go ahead. Oh, thank you. You know, that, most of us just be happy that way. You know. But to be told of the Lord, you are greatly beloved. You have to bear your sufferings. You have to bear your sufferings. You have to be fed income with Christ no matter where you are. Okay, stop the excuses, stop the nonsense, stop the carry-on. Get real. Okay, you bear your suffering, you speak the truth, and that person is special to God. How far would you be willing to go to get that special touch? How much would you want that? How important it is for you to have that? Okay. That's the thing you've got to think about. Let's go ahead and stand as we move. Let's take a moment to pray. I'm going to have someone come play the piano. You know, if the Lord has challenged you about something tonight, why don't you go ahead and use the altar and just come before the Lord. Not because you want to, right? Just because you want to, because you're not coming for people and you're not coming for Brother Shemesh. It's just, actually, Lord, I would like to talk to you tonight, and I'd like to I just have something to say, something to ask, something, I don't know. But just, let's just go ahead and take some time to pray. And how about we all pray? How about if you're standing and you have no need of yourself, you would pray for some others? How about that? How about you just say, you know, some people just might need to say this, Lord, I'm just in a hole and I actually don't even know how to get out. I've tried and I honestly don't even know what to do. I'm not even sure. But I'll just tell you, Lord, I actually would like to be better for you. I actually would. And I do want your help and I do want your working. You know, just sometimes it's the heart, the sincerity of heart that God hears more than even the choice words. It's just a cry. God help me, God help me. You know, I just believe, you know, there are people who do need wisdom. You know, there are some people who just, you know, a touch of power would help. There are some people who just, you know, they love the Lord and really just want to, you know, be that person that he would work in. You know, husbands and wives need to have a chat. Just talk about who you are and who you're not as a family. And just be clear on that and get on the same page. And, you know, you don't have to be anyone else. And just make some decisions for your own family, for your own self. And, you know, because it's got to be just from you. And, you know, it has to be that way.